Hello once again, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the iPhone Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Ng, and once again, I'm joined with Justin Louie. Today, we have lots of news to talk about. On top of that, I'd just like to say that we're so happy to hear about the iPhone 4 that was just announced, but we have some other Apple and iPhone news to talk about today, so let's get started. Justin, how are you doing today?
Good. Glad to be here again, and let's get going.
All right, for sure. First story that we have here on our topic is AT&T has a rebate or an upgrade for recent iPhone 3GS purchasers. Also, there's been news that AT&T will have a 7 a.m. launch day opening at all stores in America.
Are you listening, Rogers and Bell and Telus? And all, they announce it well in advance. They have early times. They take care of people who just bought it. You can maybe learn a lesson. Yeah, I think it's neat that AT&T is doing that. To me, it's almost going above and beyond what they need to do. Like, who didn't know a new iPhone? Like, if you bought a 3GS in the last few months, like, were you living in a cave? You didn't know there was a brand new amazing phone coming out?
Yeah, I completely agree. But, you know, there are some people who don't feel that they need to be at the very edge of, you know, iPhone version, so they just, you know, plunk down money for a 3GS. So, but for those who do care, hold your horses, because the next iPhone is coming.
Exactly.
So, next story, Apple is now accepting iOS 4 apps for approval. This includes any application that you want to submit for iOS 4 to go with the iPhone 4 and the Retina display. Developers will have to submit higher resolution images, artwork, primarily to go with their apps.
Is that, do you have to have the higher artwork? Or, because that's the thing, because they always make you, or they don't make you, actually. That's actually one of the annoyances when they switch OSs. That first few weeks, a lot of times you'll find apps that will suddenly be removed from your phone because it'll say, oh, it's not compatible with that version. So I know they tell the developers to try to get them in early, but I wonder if they just have to have one that's compatible with OS 4, or if they actually have to have that higher res artwork and everything built right in.
Sorry, I meant just if you want your app to look the best on the iPhone 4.
Yeah,
obviously,
so
with 3GS and 3G devices, it won't.
It probably is optional. They just are telling you if you want to have it in, they're starting to approve those already, which I'm glad they're getting an early start, because like I said, it's a pain those first few weeks when you switch over, when a lot of the developers were slow to get it in and you lose some of your apps.
Yeah, and on top of that, it takes Apple some time to approve updates as well, even though Steve Jobs did mention in the keynote that 95% of apps are approved in 7 days, and that includes updates, right?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. This is a very interesting story. One particular website talks about a shattered iPhone 4 screen, and their specific purpose was to talk about how the so-called crystallized glass that Johnny Ive described to us is not so strong after all. The website, it's iFixYourEye. They came into possession of an iPhone 4 shell, and they decided to do a couple drop tests. But the funny thing is, this iPhone 4 shell didn't have anything inside, so it's not very accurate to say that the glass is going to shatter. I mean, even if you had an iPhone first gen, the iPhone 3G or the 3GS, the screen is going to crack no matter what. These iPhones, they are pretty delicate devices.
Yeah, that's what we call in the industry link bait. That's strictly an article trying to drive people to their site. They didn't show a video, far as I know. Who knows how many times they dropped it before they did, and how is it any use or interest to anyone when it's an empty shell? I'm sure when the whole thing's assembled, it's going to give it rigidity in certain areas, and I mean, I'll be interested when the phone's out, how it holds up. Not to mention, like you said, these are delicate, high-tech devices that aren't designed to be dropped onto cement from 4 or 5 feet or whatever they said they did. So I guess we'll really find out what they're like once they're out, but I don't put much stock in this report.
Right. Here's what I found really interesting about the next story here is when Steve Jobs announced the next iPhone 4 He talked about how the display was the best display that's ever been made on a mobile phone, and it's called the Retina display. Now, Wired and PC World had a story that talks about a certain fellow here called Raymond Sanera. He's claiming that the Retina display is technically false advertising because he's mentioning that if you were to compare the resolution limit of the eye with pixels on a screen, you need to, I'm reading the quote here, you must convert angular resolution to linear resolution. Anyways, basically what he's saying that after you've converted the DPI to an actual retina display, you would need 477 pixels per inch to have an accurate claim of being a retina display.
Yeah, again, I think this is kind of a non-story. There's already been a couple other people who've done the science or the math another way and said, no, it's fine to call it that. Bottom line is everybody who was there who saw that screen was blown away. A guy like Ryan Block from GDGT said it's the best thing he's ever seen. That's a guy who reviews gadgets for a living and is typically pretty hard on Apple. Like he's no Apple fanboy. He's been pretty tough on a lot of their stuff. So if he says it's the best screen he's ever seen, then I'll take that over whatever this doctor or whoever he is has to say.
Yeah, there's another fellow who actually read the story in Wired, and he runs a blog called Bad Astronomy. It's part of another bunch of sort of scientific websites. The fellow's name is Phil Plate, and he's actually worked on calibrating the Hubble telescope previously, so he knows what he's talking about when it comes to this sort of thing. Basically, he said that Sinera's claims that Jobs was lying isn't really true because the claim only applies to people who have sort of a perfect 20/20 vision. He ended up doing some calculations, and his calculations, basically he concluded that Jobs wasn't falsely advertising the iPhone's capabilities. Basically, if you have perfect vision or so-called 20/20 vision, then the original claims by Sinera would only apply.
Interesting. But again, I think the bottom line is the screen is amazing, and I guess we'll all see that in a few weeks.
Yeah, obviously, once the hands-on reviews come out, then we can make our judgments.
And to be honest, I wasn't upset with my 3GS screen. Like, as much as the screen, if it's that much better, then I welcome it. But I mean, the screens on these devices are already pretty incredible. Like, I'm constantly blown away how good video and how good these apps work on the 3GS. So any improvement at this point is just a bonus to me.
Right. Okay, we have another story here. The Apple/Google ad feud has once again continued. As we all know, there's an advertising company that was called AdMob. Apple was in talks to purchase this company. However, talks took too long. Anyways, yada, yada, yada. Google stepped in and snatched away AdMob. Now, Apple's latest sort of terms for developers in the App Store is now going to prevent companies that are backed by other companies that create or manufacture mobile devices from tracking analytics and advertising in the App Store.
Yeah, again, I mean, that's a pretty complicated story with all the different legal situations. Supposedly, Apple's already under investigation from, who knows, the Justice Department or the FCC or one of those things. So, again, for the consumer, I don't know how interesting that is. That'll get worked out. But again, it's just part of that ongoing feud with Apple. They're certainly not going to make it easy. If the U.S. government makes them accept those kind of things, I guess they'll have to. But otherwise, they're not going to make things easy on Google at this point.
Right, right. Yeah, certainly interesting how Google has this... Apple has this really tight control on the App Store. And when people aren't able to get their way with Apple, they just sort of make a lot of noise about that. Moving on here, a story from Adobe. They're making some bold predictions that they believe by the end of 2012, 250 million mobile phones will have Flash. So it seems like Adobe is trying to predict the future for their own... For the for their for the future of Flash. They're basically trying to create news that they think, you know, Flash devices will be successful, and they're going to be about 250 million of them in 2012, minus the iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch.
Yeah, I think they're dreaming. I don't see it happening. Anything's possible. Those numbers are huge. To me, that means they're basically saying I'm going to be on every platform but Apple. But it's one of those things, we've talked about it a few times on the podcast already, that people look for that missing feature. They want to make a big deal about it. And then Android had their update a few weeks ago that included Flash, and all the big tech journalists that are kind of on the anti-side of Apple right now, oh good, I finally got Flash. And then if you follow up on their Twitter accounts or their podcasts or their blogs, half of them are saying now, oh no, the Flash is terrible, I turned it off, it sucks the battery life like crazy, phones, it crashes the browser, the videos don't work right, it's better to use it in the native player, because of course Google supports HTML5 too. That's why I was pretty disappointed that Google went to Flash. I'm pretty sure they did that just to go take another dig at Apple, because they at one point were bigger proponents of HTML5 than even Apple was. So again, the few phones that have it now, nobody's that impressed with it. So unless Adobe can really get their you-know-what together, I can't see Flash being big on a mobile device. It's bad enough on the Mac, on these big, powerful MacBooks we have now. It runs crappy. It's still the only thing that crashes on my MacBook. I've never lost a program, had my computer shut down, anything. But every once in a while, Safari, nope, sorry, you lost that video. The Flash player plugin has crashed, so...
Right, yeah, Flash makes it makes my fan on my MacBook just go absolutely insane. The bottom of the MacBook gets super hot. I can fry an egg on the back. It's pretty intense. Anytime you load up sort of, you know, Flash on a website, streaming videos, it definitely heats up your laptop. Okay, moving on. There's a very popular RSS reader called Pulse RSS. It was pulled from the App Store. But then apparently Steve Jobs stepped in and it's coming back.
Yeah, again, it's interesting that the word is apparently. It's funny how these things get reported and then get spread around by every article, and they're all just sourcing this same, oh, Steve Jobs must have done it. To me, the more interesting part about this story is, I mean, it's kind of funny that Steve Jobs promotes the thing in his keynote. Literally hours later, the thing is down, and then it's back up. So I wouldn't be surprised if Steve Jobs did something. But the story that's getting glossed over a little bit for me is, how stupid is the New York Times? You now don't, you're A, putting out the RSS feed yourself. That's the reason you put it out, is so people pick it up. B, you're one of these slow companies that are so behind the curve that you're one of the few people not putting the full full story in your RSS feeds. So it's only headlines and a few lines anyways. And then a huge popular app that Steve Jobs is promoting and it's getting all kinds of downloads and people are talking about it, you're upset that they're putting your you know what I mean, they're promoting your paper. Just right. It's another example of old media just having their heads up. Again, they're you know where's, they don't know what they're doing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, think about the exposure that the New York Times would get just from having
an RSS feed. Most apps make you pull in your own. Like, I use RSS feeds on my iPhone every day, and I use Google Reader, and I pull in all the stuff that I want. And that's probably how most people do it. And most apps don't pre-subscribe to different RSS feeds. If I was the New York Times, like if I woke up tomorrow morning and some RSS reader was pulling in our podcast or pulling in our blog, I'd be like, oh, thank you. I'd be sending them an email note saying, hey, thank you for doing that. These guys don't want it. They're saying, oh no, like take it down. And now it's back up without them in there automatically. Good job, New York Times. Now everybody who buys that app doesn't get your feeds. Good work.
Yeah, they felt that it was, they felt the Pulse Newsreader app was making commercial use of the NewYorkTimes.com and Boston.com RSS feeds, which would violated their terms of use. So, you know, they thought that the content, the use of their content is unlicensed.
Yeah, but, it's sort of like, you know, the AP wanting people to pay for their stuff. Again, it's just that backwards thinking. So again, yeah. I hope you enjoy it, New York Times. You've helped Paul sell a million more copies because you've put it in the news, and now every copy they sell no longer has any of your stuff. So good work with that.
Yeah. Here's another story related to Twitter. Lauren Brichter, who is the creator of Tweety for Mac and the iPhone, which recently his company 8bits was picked up by Twitter. He has mentioned at the Worldwide Developers Conference that he plans to update Mac and iPad development for this very popular app.
Yeah, and he's going to continue to develop the desktop client. I think part of the controversy was, I'm not sure if you deal with MacHeist, but they sell bundles of Mac software, and it's right. You always get a bunch of great Mac programs for cheap price. And their big promotion that ended up being released just a couple days before he announced that he sold to Twitter, he said that he was doing Tweety 2 and 3 for the Mac platform, and that everybody in MacHeist was able to get a free upgrade to that into the beta. And then a couple days later, he announced the sale to Twitter, and then everyone started complaining, oh, well, now we're not going to get it. If you go on the MacHeist forums, everybody's complaining that, hey, where's that? We still haven't got our beta release yet. So I think that's was part of why people were asking him what was going on with the Tweety for Mac.
Right. Yeah. I first, you know, learned about the MacHeist bundle. It's a great deal, and you just end up getting sucked into purchasing the software that you will forget about using. But I mean, some of the programs are actually really neat, and it's a great price for all those apps.
Yeah, it's not really anything to do with this podcast, but I like it because the price of it is such a good deal that if you want one or two of the apps, it's already a decent deal. And I find that I end up using at least half of them, if not more. I always discover a gem of a program. Like I use Audio Hijack Pro to actually record this podcast, and that was one that just came in one of the earlier heists that I didn't think that I had necessarily any need for, but it was in there. And there's been lots of similar apps to that. So again, that's a little off topic, but if you're a Mac user, check out Mac Heist next time they do one of their bundles.
Right, right. Okay, let's move on to some other news now. This one is related to iPhone users in Canada. Rogers and Fido, they've introduced a new policy. It's regarding the blocking of data on your mobile account. With this new policy, you actually cannot block data from you cannot block your device from accessing data. Basically, in the past, users who were using maybe an original iPhone, they would call in to Rogers and Fido and specifically ask for data to be blocked in case of some sort of accident where data was being accessed and users were being charged. Now, this new data policy stated by Rogers, they're making a weird statement. They're saying that this change will allow customers the flexibility to access data when they want without having to call customer care to add or remove the block.
I'm disappointed that this story is even on the podcast, because now I have to complain again about Rogers again, and I'm sure it's already, even after just a few episodes, seeming like I'm just going to bash Rogers every chance I get. But it's just so stupid. I don't understand. If there was some real reason to do it, come out and say it, but I'm sure there's no technical reason or any promise causing. It's just a way to suck people in to accidentally using data. If somebody wants data, they're already going to get it, and if they want it blocked, it's because there's some poor 70-year-old woman, like my aunt, for instance. I talked her into getting an iPhone, and one of the first things she said to me was, well, I don't want to get an iPhone because the person at the store told me that it does all this internet stuff that I don't want, and I'm going to end up getting charged for it. And what I said was, yeah, it seems kind of weird. I actually argued. I was on the phone at one point. She was calling Rogers, and even the Rogers rep was saying, oh, no, I don't think this is a good phone for her because she doesn't want to use the internet. And I was saying, yeah, I know it's pretty weird to buy an iPhone and not want to use the internet, but I still think it's a hell of a phone. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. It has great call quality, has other great features. Why can't you just turn the data off? And at that point, they would, and they turned it off. And something happened with her that they screwed up blocking it. And something happened where she started getting these text messages saying, warning, you've gone over $100 on data and everything. So I mean, it can happen to people. You can make a mistake. People who want data are going to use it and are paying for it and are willing to pay for it. Give me a break, Rogers. Someone who just doesn't have any use for data on their phone, block it. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, there's no use in having the option to block data. I mean, what's wrong with that? I would compare this to the iPad 3G plans with TELUS, where the plan starts at $20 for 500 megabytes. However, there's no way to cap your usage at 500 megabytes. The onus is on the user to consistently check how much data they're using, right? And when you put it on the user, the majority of the time, overages will occur. And that's when users will have to pay the overage fees. So it's really questionable, these policies.
Yeah, I think, go ahead.
I really wonder, you know, what they're thinking. Like, who comes up with these things? I mean, let's just remove this option for them to not block data.
Again, I don't want to always be anti-Rogers or sound like I'm anti-business, because I'm actually not. I totally respect Rogers' ability to make money, and I want them to make money. I want them to be profitable, and I want that, but I want them doing it by doing things right. And I'm sure their thinking is, well, we got all these people who are turning data off, so they're missing out on these other services. So not only are we missing out on the revenue stream from selling them the data, but we sell ringtones and all these different things that make us money. Well, you're Rogers. You have access to these customers. If you want to promote data usage, send them text messages, send them emails. I know for a fact, Rogers, you're not shy about sending advertising to your customers. I get calls, I get texts, I get emails, I get stuff, 15 different things in my bill every month. You're not shy about it. So if you're trying to promote data use, again, send people emails, send them texts, do whatever you want. But for somebody who just says flat out, I do not want data, or I'm so scared. That's the other thing. If you're so worried about getting everybody to use data, then why don't you have promotions that give everybody a little bit of data and an ability to block it? Like we mentioned a few weeks ago on the podcast, there are already countries looking into making rules where you have to allow people to set limits. I mean, if you're not going to block it, at least let people set limits. But even that, I don't think is fair. If someone just flat out doesn't want data, their phone should block it. Now I guess it falls on Apple and all the other carriers to make things right in the hardware of the phone to just flat out block data in a way that's not going to screw up and let these people get caught up with data fees they didn't want.
Right. Let's move on to another Rogers story now that we're talking about Rogers.
Please make it positive.
Well,
I want to praise Rogers.
Okay, well, let's move on to sort of the app section here. Rogers On Demand Mobile is a new app that is available from Rogers. It's completely free. It will actually have commercial-free 6-minute entertainment clips with on-the-go cutting-edge clarity. You can watch quality shows or clips of shows from channels such as MTV. Justin, I know you're a fan of shows such as Jersey Shore. anyways, they are also going to offer live sporting events such as the World Cup, which I believe starts tomorrow. But there's a catch. A monthly subscription fee of $5 plus a one-time $10 fee for premium sporting events is required to watch the eligible content titles. Comments, please?
Oh, come on. You can't do this to me again. Rogers, what are you thinking? Look at Hulu. Look at ABC app for the iPad. They're giving out full episodes for free. You guys are going to charge for clips? If you pay the $5, do you at least get the full shows, or is it still just clips?
No, they're just clips.
Oh, come on, Rogers. Now, I'm dying to say something positive. So if it was $10 for every game of the World Cup, then that, I guess, wouldn't be bad.
I think it's just the $10 fee
for clips
to watch
again?
The games. No, I think for actual games, which is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's not a bad deal. Like, I have no interest in soccer. But if they told me, oh, we'll pay $10 and you have the whole NHL playoffs or Major League Baseball playoffs or something like that, that would be pretty cool. So if you're a soccer fan and you can pay $10 and get full games and maybe not all the games, but a decent amount of games each day or whatever for $10, that actually sounds like a pretty good deal. So please, Rogers, let that be the case.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about this one. I mean, I would pay $5 to watch TV shows. That's reasonable. But to have it only available for small clips?
I would pay $5 if it was full episodes of most of the stuff Rogers covers. Like, I don't want Jersey Shore. Like,
but I thought you told me you liked that show. No.
You have me confused with someone else.
All right, probably. Anyways, if you do look at the ratings of this app right now on iTunes, 5 stars, eight of them are 5 stars. There's been 50 ratings, 39 of them have been 1-star ratings. So,
and 8 that... Rogers employees have rated it 5 stars.
Now, you don't know that, do you?
No, sorry.
No, you don't. All right.
I'm being cynical. I'm sorry.
let's move on. However, I do want to talk about a Rogers service that, which I completely and I commend Rogers. It's their Red Board for people.
Are we changing the name of the show to the Rogers Podcast?
We are not being sponsored by Rogers, and if we are, we're doing a horrible job of promoting them. Anyways,
people think we'll be sponsored by Bell.
Yeah,
we're secretly Bell plants.
Bell and Bellis did not pay.
For the record, I hate Bell and Telus more than I hate Rogers. If you people can believe that, people listening, whoa. I actually hate Bell and Telus more than I hate Rogers. I'm actually a Rogers fan, if you can dig that.
Wow, I thought we were going to leave these extreme views off the podcast. But anyways, you probably heard about the Red Board. This is the Rogers Red Board. They've introduced this. It's part of their social media outreach to fans and customers. This is where they post the latest mobile news stories on their blog, and you can comment, and they will respond to you. Have you tried this out, Justin?
For people listening at home, Gary's doing this on purpose. He knows my feelings on the Red Board. He is baiting me to go off on Rogers again. So what I'm going to say is this. I actually admire Rogers' attempt to be a little more hip, I guess you could say, and try to use these social networks to stay in contact with their customers. They started it last year with Twitter and Facebook around the launch of the 3GS, and it can be helpful. But the problem with it is they post on the Red Board, then whoever posts it, I don't know if the people who it says it posts, like there's this guy on Twitter, Rogers Keith, that is actually seems like a nice guy, and he tries to get back to people, and he was pretty helpful during the iPhone launch. But the problem is these guys post it, and then they seem to hang around the Red Board for 5 or 10 minutes and respond to everybody who responds in the first couple minutes. So if you're the first 5 or 6 people to comment, you're getting a reply, you're getting something, then they're just gone. Then the same threads get going for weeks, like the iPad one's still going. I subscribe via email, and I still get updates every single day. The thing's 400 posts. People are all over the thing, and Rogers never comes back. Like, after that first, like, 20 minutes, they never come back, and that's just a bad policy, because not only does it show that you don't care or you're not following it up, and people who have legitimate concerns, you're not speaking to them. Plus, the thread gets out of control with 300 people bashing the heck out of you. I don't know why you don't want to come back and at least try to put your point across. So, again, I know you did that, brought the story up on purpose, but I was positive in the sense that I said it was a good idea for them to do it, but they need to check back. You can't just post, check it for 5 or 10 minutes, and then be gone. That's my free advice to Rogers.
I would do nothing of the kind. To try to bait you into another anti-Rogers rant. I would never do that. But anyways, you know what? I think it's great that, you know, they're trying to reach out to customers, but the whole point is to connect and to be able to respond to the concerns that people have, right? But the problem is people ask questions and they're never answered. Like you said, I mean, the whole thing with the iPad 3G, that thread must have like 1,000 comments by now. It just must be crazy. But anyways.
And the thing about it is, I'll be the first to admit, half the people who are bashing Rogers on these boards are idiots. Like, most of these people make me look like the biggest Rogers fan in the world. Like, they'll make ridiculous accusations against Rogers or expect, like, I remember when the 3G data plan, I mean, there were people just saying, hey, Rogers, I want unlimited data for $5 a month and these crazy things. But you let those idiots win when you don't come on to respond. every time if you responded and said, hey, we're trying to do this and put your point across, I think most reasonable people can respect where you're coming from. But just to put the post up and then never come back to it again, to me, is just crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Anyways, I do apologize for that sort of Rogers tangent that we were just on. We do value Rogers as one of our...
And Rogers, feel free to call or email me. You know my phone number, and my email address is justin@theiphonepodcast.com. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, we would love to have you. I would love to. We'll give you a full hour to explain all these mysterious policies that you come up with, and I'm sure the listeners would enjoy hearing it. So free invitation. Come on anytime.
There you go. Way to set the example. Way to be open and proactive. I like that. Okay, let's move on. Let's cover a few iPad stories that have been happening this week. One of the biggest ones is down in the USA. AT&T had a massive leak of email addresses on their website. I believe over 100,000 emails of that belong to iPad 3G owners were leaked, or they're actually, it was hacked. And these emails have been exposed, emails that contain celebrities, government officials, military personnel. All of these emails were just leaked by one group. I can't remember their name. Something that had to do with Goatsy.
Yeah, I can't remember, because I was actually just listening to a podcast before we started recording saying there was some type of update and they had kind of figured out why the company did it and how they were able to do it, but I didn't have time to listen to it all, so I don't know much about the story. But it's just one of those things. It's some bad luck for Apple and AT&T, especially AT&T. Like, you haven't had enough bad press that now you have to pull this within a few days of screwing over everybody on those data plans. So not a good week to be AT&T.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate. I mean one lesson that can be learned from this is that anytime I highly suggest to people to have sort of a secondary email that you use for filling out web forms and anything that has to do with sort of submitting your email to a newsletter. Use a secondary email, and it'll save you a lot of spam and a lot of trouble in the long run. I mean, even though free email services like Gmail have really good spam filters, you will save some time if you take the time to come up with sort of a secondary throwaway email address.
Yeah, that's always a good idea.
Okay. Another iPad story here is the Time Magazine app is they're giving the app a second go. Their first app was somewhat successful. It had the Steve Jobs was on the cover, but now they gave a sneak peek of their upcoming iPad app during the iPhone 4 keynote, and now they're following in the footsteps of Wired, and they're coming out with sort of a revised app that has more graphics, just better interaction. We know that the Wired app has been very successful. I believe reports have said that they've actually sold more subscriptions or more copies of the digital version compared to their paper version. So right there, that just shows that, you know, hey, the iPad is making a difference.
Well, it should show everybody, every content producer, film studios, music labels, game companies, whoever it may be, that people are out there, they're wanting your product, and they're wanting it at a reasonable price. I thought the Wired app was ridiculous at that price, and obviously people are still doing it. So imagine what will happen if they keep innovating with the app, make it more interactive, make it more unique of an experience, and they either lower the price or maybe have a subscription price if you commit for the year to get a savings like you do when you're buying the print magazine, then the sky's the limit for these companies. They just have to start thinking about it. Instead of sitting back and crying that everybody's stealing your stuff, get it out there, and people are proving over and over again that they're willing to pay for good stuff.
Yeah, if you've seen the sneak peek of the upcoming Time app, it blew me away. I mean, the interaction is awesome. You can view stories by looking at a map of the world. There's videos built right in, like video transitions leading up to stories. Definitely a really nice app. However, the price is still $5 for an issue. $5. I mean, I can buy the paper version for $5.
Exactly. And you can subscribe for way less than that. There's constantly promotions for various things. You can get subscriptions for free or sometimes 70-80% off the cover price. So again, I'm interested to see what will happen with the prices of these things long term. It's almost like they're banking on the novelty factor right now. What'll be interesting is, okay, so you sell issue one at $4.99 and you get a million downloads because everybody's dying to try it out. How many of those people are going to buy it month after month after month if you keep that price at the $5 or whatever it is? So that's what'll be interesting, because I think it's really interesting, and I think it's the future of magazines. But again, I think the price is too high.
Yeah. On top of that, I mean, the downloads of each magazine is, I think the Wired app was almost 500 megabytes, right? So you need to think about, you know, are people going to keep on downloading at that size? I guess they're going to have to, right? But I guess you'll just have to delete the app.
The other thing I don't know, because I have to admit, sorry, the thing I would have to admit is I haven't tried it. What type of file is it? Do you have any access to the magazine outside of your iPhone or iPad?
I do not believe so.
I doubt it.
You download it like an app.
Yeah, see that's another thing that bothers me.
It's not in PDF. It's not in EPUB format or whatever.
That's the problem.
It's an app. A 500 megabyte app.
Say, for instance, if I could subscribe to a magazine and have that great experience on my iPhone or iPad, and then there was some way to, say, download it into a Mac app or just have it saved even, I'd feel better. But it's the same reason that I'm excited as heck to read comics on the iPhone and the iPad. That's awesome. But I don't like the idea that Marvel Comics is A, charging almost the same as they do to go into your comic shop and buy it, but you have no ability to kind of collect that stuff. Once it's deleted off your app, you don't have a PDF viewer that you could access it on your computer. Like, if I could download The Incredible Hulk every month, keep the most recent episodes issues on my phone, and then have an archive, so you're still having that collecting mentality. Like, they're wanting us to pay the same price as we could buy it in the physical world, but you don't have that same ownership. It's the same as when you buy a movie off of iTunes. That's why I don't end up buying too many movies, because if I go to Walmart and buy that DVD, I can dump it down onto my phone, but I still have that DVD. If I buy the movie from iTunes, I can watch it on my phone, I can watch it on my computer, but if I want to, say, stream it to my Xbox or do something else with it, you can't do it. So that's the other thing that has to get worked out with these things.
Right. Okay. Enough about that. Let's move on to another story that's has to categorize this with people who love to damage iPads. There's a video posted of an iPad being melted with a whole bunch of blow torches, and it was made by a group called Project Green Apple, who was trying to get some noise and get some media attention about the conditions that happened that were in the WinTech factory. That I believe the incident happened last month, where some workers were cleaning iPhone displays with poison N-hexane, and this material ended up poisoning some workers and getting them really sick. So I think that was also the cause of some riots and a strike. So if you do want to see an iPad being melted or being torched, it is up on the blog on iPadinCanada.ca. Other videos that we posted in that one post, there's also the one of the PC World stress test. There's another one with a bunch of guys who have just purchased an iPad and they take out a baseball bat and have some fun. And then there's the one and the only, Will It Blend? The folks at BlendTech blending an iPad. What's up with people destroying these devices?
Well, I can tell you for one thing, it kills me to see it, especially when I don't have my iPad yet. It was hard enough to see people destroying their iPhones, but now to see iPads being destroyed when so many of us still can't find them, they're sold out, they're hard to get, it's kind of a bummer. I will let the one group off the hook because they're trying to make some political message. I mean, that's a good idea, I guess. At least there's some type of point to it. The BlendTech, I will also give them a pass because they're selling the blender. So it's one of the most unique advertising models I've ever seen. But then these idiots who go on YouTube with a baseball bat, I kind of wonder if you don't have something better to be doing with your time and your money. There's people who could probably use that iPad out there in the world for good if you're just going to smash it with a bat. So I'm not crazy about those videos.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. Okay. What else here? Okay. Let's, another thing that we can talk about involving the iPad. I've seen a whole bunch of these videos with iPads and weddings. People have been married and iPads have been involved. You know, someone's the officiant or the pastor or whatever you want to call that person marrying a couple. It shows them reading off an iPad.
Oh, good. When you first started the story, when you first started the story, I thought you were saying people were marrying their iPads. So at least they're just a prop in the wedding. Okay, I feel better now.
Yes, yeah, but even, you know, one guy pulls out his iPhone to update his status on Facebook and to tweet out that he's married right when he's standing there. It's, very interesting. Is it necessary to have an iPad at a wedding?
I don't think it's necessary, but as we've seen before, there's people who've been married at the Apple Store. There's recently been a dating site that launched just for people who like Apple products, so... As you well know, people can be pretty passionate about Apple, so it doesn't shock me that people are adding Apple products to their wedding.
Right. Okay. Well, that's it for iPhone and iPad news. Let's move on to some apps that are going to be pretty interesting. Justin, what do you have in store for us this week?
I actually have a very cool free app that... Not only will I recommend, but I will probably spend several weeks on the podcast talking about different uses of this, because it's not an open source app, but the developers have made this thing so open that other developers use it to do some unique things. So I'll start with just kind of telling you a little bit about this app, and then several times I'll mention several other uses. And now's a good time to mention, we are going to do app reviews and sort of use cases for apps every week from now on. A lot of people have been messaging me on Twitter or email saying that's their favorite part of the show and they like it. So yes, we're definitely going to do that. And if you can always go to the iPhonePodcast.com, and we'll not only do links to the apps, but if we talk about a certain hack or a certain way of using it, we'll make sure to link to the appropriate posts. So the app I'm going to mention today is called Simple Note, and Simple Note is free. You can buy an upgraded version just with an in-app purchase to get rid of ads. And it does exactly what it sounds. It's Simple Note. It's just a note-taking app, nothing fancy. It's literally just hit plus, start a new note, and it's basically just text. The reason I love Simple Note, besides the fact that it's just simple and fast and easy and a really clear interface just to get in text, is there's so many add-ons for this app. For example, Simple Note makes a dashboard app for the Mac, so you can just click on your dashboard and you put in your credentials into the iPhone, you put in your credentials to the dashboard app, and you add something on your phone, and then a second later you can access it from your Mac through this dashboard widget. There's also a Mac app, again, a free Mac app called Notational Velocity, which is a word processor that automatically pulls in stuff from Simple Note. And the add-on that someone built this week that just blew my mind was called Mobile Download. And what this genius guy came up with is you download this free app for the Mac, Mobile Download. It runs in your menu bar. And what it does is the first time you launch the app, it creates a note in Simple Note called Downloads. Then anytime you're on your iPhone, you see an MP3 you want to download, a video you want to download, anything you want to download, because everybody knows you can't download directly on the iPhone. You just copy the URL from what you want to download. You add it to the note in Simple Note called Mobile Download. And then your desktop at home is just set to check it. You can have it check every minute, every 20 minutes, every half an hour, whatever you want. That just keeps checking that note. And anytime it finds a URL, it starts downloading that thing. So you can be out for dinner and say, oh, I want to download and watch Lost when I get home. You put in that URL and it starts downloading right away on your computer. And if you really want to get geeky and you add it to Dropbox, you can actually have it automatically saved to Dropbox, and then it's on your phone as well. So you put in the URL into SimpleNote, a couple seconds later it's downloading on your computer. When it's done downloading, if you use Dropbox, it's on your computer, it's on your phone. It's pretty amazing, and it's all free. So I know that probably sounded really weird and out there. I will have links on the blog to explain which things you have to download, but it isn't as complicated as it sounds, but it is very useful to be able to use the iPhone to be able to download stuff and have it sitting waiting on your computer or your Dropbox when you're ready for it.
Right. So you're saying that with SimpleNote, I like the part about the Dropbox interface. That's awesome because Dropbox is completely free.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that sounds like a great note app.
And like I said, this developer is really cool. His API is completely open. So like I said, SimpleNote, you can make notes right on your iPhone, but there's a dashboard widget. There's one that I call that I use is called Notational Velocity, but there's at least five or six Mac like text editors that work with SimpleNote that you simply just put in your SimpleNote username and password, and then it will pull down everything you're doing. And it's a two-way sync. So if I'm on my dashboard or my program on the Mac and I'm typing something out, I'm doing show notes for the show or whatever, the next time I launch the iPhone app, it'll be in there too. So it's not a one-way sync. You can work on the same note on both devices, and it just keeps it in sync perfectly.
Nice, nice. That's a great app. That's really useful for, it could be useful for anyone. If you have a business, students, anyone.
Exactly. It's one of those apps that you're going to, if what I just told you sounded interesting, you're going to love it right away. But even if you download it, it's one of those apps that I bet you most people who have it, after a few months, it becomes one of their most, like, it's their go-to app. It has so many useful purposes. And like I said, the fact that these developers make their API open, every day there's something unique. Like, I just found out about this mobile downloads this week, and there's stuff like that coming out all the time. So it's a super useful app. And like I said, it's free, and it's great if you just need to take notes. I can't think of a better way to do it. It's fast and simple and free. But like I said, if you want to get a little geekier and do these more high-end tasks, it's great for that too.
Nice. Great app. And I love, this is the future, right? Cloud computing. That's the way it works now. Okay. Moving on. One app that I've been sort of hooked on. It's similar to this, I guess, but not really. It's called Words with Friends. It's basically sort of a Scrabble knockoff type. It's not Scrabble, but it is. It's one of those games where when you log in on your iPhone, it's synced that you can also play it with your iPad. And it's great because it has push notifications. So, you know, you just make your word and you exit the app, and when your friends make a word and it's your turn again, you are sent a push notification. And the cool thing is the app for the iPhone, there's a free version. On the iPad, it is a paid version. However, I can switch from my iPhone or my iPad, and my game will always be saved from where I've left off. You get push notifications for when it's your turn, and there's also a live chat within each individual game. So it's pretty neat. If anyone wants to challenge me to a game, I'm not very good. If you want some practice on pummeling someone at this game, look for the user iPhone in Canada. So that the game is called Words with Friends.
Yeah, that sounds cool. There's so many great examples of these online games now with the iPhone, and I've kind of purposely stayed away from them because I know how addicted I was at one point to Xbox 360. So there's a lot of great online apps to go back and forth, but it's very cool that it has push notifications, so you could almost be off doing something else or get another app going and then go back to it when it's your turn. That sounds really neat.
Yeah, it was the number one favorite app of 2009, voted by Wired. I never was really into Scrabble and all those sort of word games and such, but once I started playing this, I mean, I just got hooked. I mean, a whole bunch of some of my friends play them. I play with my wife, like even friends that are from out of town. I told friends with iPhones, I'm like, download this app. It's free. and you know, you can still sort of connect, and you know, when you have some downtime, you know, just play a word and you know, let the push notifications come to notify you that it's your turn again.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
All right, now let's turn it over to Dusty and Rory Piper from iEvolution.ca for the latest jailbreak news. Guys?
All right, thanks, Gary and Justin, for inviting us back to be on the iPhone podcast. This is Mike, also known as Rory Piper from iEvolution.ca, and I'm also a contributor to iPhoneinCanada.ca and iPadinCanada.ca. And I'm here with Dusty.
Hey everyone, this is Dusty from iEvolution.ca.
So today, this week, we got some bit of news in the jailbreak world. The Red Snow application that the iPhone dev team has been putting out for the last few firmwares, they've updated it to work with the newest iOS 4 release, the Gold Master candidate. It works with the iPhone 3G and the iPod Touch 2G. Really only for developers at this point. There's not much working in Cydia on iOS 4. Mainly for those developers of the jailbreak apps to get their stuff ready for the official release at the end of the month. I tried it on my iPhone 3G, and it works great, just as Red Snow always has. One great thing about this release is it gives you the option to enable multitasking and the home screen wallpapers on your iPhone 3G and the iPod Touch 2G, something that these devices don't natively come with in iOS 4. Apple has disabled those just because they don't run smooth at all. And you can really see that when you enable them yourself, it does slow down the device a lot. So they haven't officially announced this as a release, but you can search it out. If you head over to iEvolution.ca, we've got some links there that you can download it and try it out. But like we say, it's not going to really do anything for you because there's not much working in Cydia right now for iOS 4. What do you think, Dusty? Probably end of the month we'll start seeing some official stuff after iPhone 4 comes out?
Yeah. Once the iPhone 4 is released, I'm sure we'll see some new tools and tweaks and some exciting stuff being released.
Yeah, I've been digging around in iOS 4 in the file structure, and there's going to be some cool things for building themes. Similar to the iPad, there's some new dock shadows and icon shadows and different gradients on the wallpaper. So it's going to be cool to see what some developers do for themes there.
Yeah, I've been reading quite a bit of posts and tweets from people that, developers that are trying to make themes, and many of them are saying it's a lot more complicated than a normal iPhone or iPod Touch theme.
Yeah, the old days of just putting the stuff in a folder and having Winterboard recognize it are starting to go by the wayside. You got to really build a specific file structure to get the stuff to work now. But, you know, Winterboard might get updated for iOS 4. You never know, there might be something new come along. We had Summerboard before. Winterboard is what's now. Maybe there's going to be another season of board. Who knows? But yeah, we'll see at the end of the month when everything's officially out. Okay, let's move on to some jailbreak applications that have been talked about this week. What do you got, Dusty?
We have an upcoming application called Mail Pulldown. If you're familiar with iPhone developer Chapone, he's the creator of Pro Switcher, InfiniDock, InfiniBoard, Vertical Scrolling, and many others. What it is, it's a tweak to the Mail app, which allows you to easily refresh new mail by simply pulling down on the list of messages. If you guys are familiar with the Twitter app and how you refresh the tweets, it's the same type of feature, and it will work on the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. You can vote for what applications you wish to be supported. If you go to iEvolution.ca, we have a post about it where you can actually click on the links to vote. And currently there's not a release date or pricing mentioned. Hopefully we'll see it here in the upcoming weeks. Other than that, there's some videos you can check it out and some screenshots. But it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've used just about every tweak that this developer has released. At the beginning there, you mentioned his name as Chapone. It's weird trying to pronounce everybody's Twitter's name, but it's CHPWN if you're seeking him out. But yeah, I've liked everything this guy's put out, and I'm excited to see this refresh pull down thing. It's my favorite part of the Twitter app.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but it started off to be Mail Pull Down, and then a week later or so, I believe he changed the name to Pull Down.
Yeah, I guess he realized it's going to be able to work with more, or maybe he got a bunch of requests saying, hey, can it work with this, can it work with that? So, yeah, I'm excited for that one. So another one, another big one has come out for the iPad, a backgrounder switching application called Circuitus, I believe it's how it's pronounced. It's been on the iPhone for a while. Now it is on the iPad. Basically gives you the ability to view what programs you have running in the background and easily switch through them and close them as you need to. They've kind of reworked the UI a little bit. The dock looks a little nicer. And now with the iPad, it works with rotation. So you see it in landscape and portrait modes. I think they updated the iPhone version as well with the same UI. It works great. With Backgrounder, you don't really get to see all the stuff you have running in the background. So you might notice your battery is dying in 3 hours and you don't know why. Well, now you can look through all your backgrounded apps and turn off the ones that are running down. I don't know if you've had a chance to play with that one, Dusty?
I actually haven't. Looking at our YouTube video, though, it does look good.
Yeah, we did a demonstration of it over on the website there, evolution.ca. So if you want to see it in action, you can check it out. But it is completely free in Cydia, as is Backgrounder. If you don't have Backgrounder for your iPad or your iPhone, you're missing out on a whole other experience that the iPhone doesn't have right now.
Yes, Backgrounder is a must.
Yeah, multitasking in Apple's way will officially come to the iPhone at the end of the month. But with Backgrounder, it actually runs the whole app in the background. It doesn't take it apart or anything. So it's worth checking out if you have a jailbroken device. I think that's all we got for this week. I want to say thanks to Justin and Gary for inviting us on the iPhone podcast. And I guess we'll see you next week.
Okay. Well, I think that this pretty much finishes this week's episode of the iPhonePodcast.com. Once again, we'd like to thank our sponsors. That's Blue Microphones, makers of quality and professional microphones that sound amazing. As you can tell from the clarity of my voice, I'm using the Blue Snowflake model, and this is a model that has been sent to us by Blue. So thank you so much for sponsoring the iPhone podcast. It's a wonderful mic, and the clarity is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I love Blue mics. I'm using a Blue Snowball as well that they didn't pay for, so I'm not paid or inclined to say that for any other reason except that I love their products. If you need a relatively cheap, easy to hook up, because these ones are both USB mics that you just plug into your computer and go, no preamps or anything funny, they're great.
Right. And didn't you want to talk about Audible?
Yes.
You're a big
Audible fan.
Audible fan.
Like I've mentioned before, something like 75,000 audiobooks available and all kinds of free podcasts, several newspapers read to you, and you can try it for a month free, no risk offer. You sign up at audiblepodcast.com/iPhonePodcast and you get a month free, plenty of time to try out a lot of their monthly free products. You get to download any book of your choice, and even if you cancel, that book is yours to keep. And so if you're a fan of audiobooks, I'm not telling you anything new. You know how great it is, but you should try Audible because they have the best selection. if you're new and you've thought, oh, I've never thought about reading, having a book read to me, you're going to love it. A lot of them aren't just some guy reading to you. There can be whole casts. It just really brings books to life. And with how busy everyone is today, it's nice to be able to just listen on your way to work or while you're working out or cleaning the house or doing tasks that can be pretty painful to do. It makes the time go by quicker reading a book. So again, if you're into that or that sounds interesting, go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhonePodcast and you can try it for a month free.
Right on. Once again, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to our podcast. We've had some immense feedback from everyone. Please, please, please continue. If you enjoy our podcast and you enjoy the content, please take 10 seconds out of your day to rate us in iTunes. Even if you're a listener from out of town, you're not from Canada, you're from the USA, please rate us in iTunes right now. Thanks to everyone out there who's listened. In iTunes Canada, we're in the top iPhone, top podcasts, and even in the tech gadgets category, we are the number one podcast. So well done, Justin, on helping getting us up there.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. I really appreciate the feedback. I've been shocked, really, on how many Twitter messages and email messages I get in the ratings on iTunes. People seem to be enjoying the show. I really appreciate that. Again, do not be shy. Drop by the blog at theiPhonePodcast.com or hit me on Twitter, twitter.com/JustinLouey. That's Louey, the name. And tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Tell me what you don't want to hear any more about or what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what more you want on, because it's all about you guys. And like I said, I'm having a lot of fun doing this and I appreciate all the feedback.
Okay, so that's it for this episode 5 of the iPhone Podcast. Once again, I'm Gary Ng, and on behalf of Justin Louie, thanks again for listening.